I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio. And you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. And John, since it is Saturday, I have a note here from Tom and Veronica. They want to know what you're drinking.
Oh, I just bought some Two Roads. I think that's the name of the brewery, an IPA. So that's I'm going to try an IPA later today, a different one. I try to try a different one every week. So.
Very cool.
Yeah. I'm not drinking it yet, though. It's a little early yet.
I know.
After,
but still.
After what I'm recording.
Yeah.
Sometimes
after. Yeah. After's fine.
You'll know I've had a stressful week if I'm drinking at noon on a Saturday.
Exactly.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author and a podcaster. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anelio. I am a musician and a teacher and a podcaster. You could follow me on Twitter at John Anelio, and you can check us out at functionalnerds.com. And today we are joined by Mike Brooks. Mike is the author of Dark Run, published here in the US by Saga Press and in the UK for Delray UK. You can check out his website, mikebrooks.co.uk, and you can follow him on Twitter at mikebrooks668. Mike, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, what's the 668 in relation to? I noticed that's something you have on your Twitter there.
Yeah, it's Neighbor of the Beast. I got it from the Discworld companion book about Terry Pratchett's Discworld, and one of the questions in there relates to the fact that because Terry Pratchett wrote Good Omens with Neil Gaiman, and then there was a mooted follow-up which I never got around to doing, which was going to be called 668 Neighbor of the Beast. And when Mike Brooks was taken on Twitter, I just, oh well, 668 then. Because 666 is a bit cliche. I'm not actually that evil.
That's good. That's great. You know, because yeah, I imagine there's quite a few Mike Brooks, and there's probably like author Mike Brooks and Mike Brooks. This seems like a relatively common name that probably got scooped up pretty quick. So Mike, you have Dark Run out now in the US, but the other you have this is actually a trilogy of books. Now, are all three out in the UK right now?
Who told you it was a trilogy?
Oh, well, there's three books out right now. So the first three parts of this series, that's what I should say, I guess.
No. The first two books are out in the UK.
Okay.
And we are seeing what happens from there.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And I know also you said that a couple of the books, even though Dark Run's available here in the States, a couple of them are available on Audible right now. So even though you can't get book two ebook and print yet in the US, you can actually get it as an Audible book right now.
Yes, you can.
Awesome. Excellent. Very good. All right, Mike. Well, lots to talk about with your book and lots of other stuff. But before we do that, I do want to mention to people listening today that if you dig the show, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can support us for $1 a month or whatever suits your lifestyle. And it helps us out a lot. And we really appreciate all the people that back us already. So once again, patreon.com/functionalnerds. And with that, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Now, Mike, do you have a pick this week? An album or an app or a book or a movie that you'd like to recommend? Or do you want to go last and Patrick and I'll go first?
I'll let you go. I do have something, but I'll let you guys go first if that's all right.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. All right. You know what I'm going to pick? I'm going to pick an app that I'm really into. I just discovered it a few days ago, and it's called Google Keep. And I'm really surprised they are not promoting this more. I found out about it. I think Wired ran an article on using it this week, and I downloaded it. And if people who are familiar with Evernote, it is a similar idea to Evernote, but I found it much more useful, actually. So it's just a way that you can take quick notes. It's really, you know, a real simple thing you could do with it, which I do all the time, is just a shopping list, like grocery shopping list. You know, you could type it up on your computer and then it appears on your phone and it's got check boxes and then you tap it and then it crosses it right off. And so just simple stuff like that, it's great. It takes excellent voice notes. So if you have an idea, say you're driving around or whatever, and you want to give your idea, you speak into it and it'll take the note, but it also transcribes it. So whatever you say, it puts it into text as well. So it takes the actual audio note and puts it into text, which I think is magic. I know there's been apps like that before, but this is one little part of it. So I found that to be very useful already. It's great if you're taking notes on a book that you're reading. It's really good. With how much Google will inundate you with their new products, I'm really surprised that this is sort of flying under the radar a little bit, but I'm finding it very useful. And I think especially if you're a creative person, you know, an author like Mike, and, you know, you're trying to always keep open to different ideas, you know, to have something where you can capture all your notes and then it's in the cloud. So it's on your phone, it's on your tablet, it's on your laptop, it's wherever you want to access, you can get it. So that is my pick this week. It's called Google Keep. So check that out. I think it's really good. All right. Patrick, do you have your pick?
Yes. Excuse me. So you and I are going to be on Cord Killers in like a couple of weeks. And they talk about all the ways to get away from cable. Something that I've had for a long time now, I've had Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. And I used it like a couple of times with my Blu-ray player, because my Blu-ray player connects to Amazon Prime. And it was a horrible, horrible experience and interface. And the Amazon website is also horrible for like picking things to put in there. And so I decided a while ago, I thought, well, you know, I don't have a way to watch Amazon Prime in my bedroom. I'll get one of those little HD Fire Sticks. So I got that. And then that sat on my desk for months. And finally, I decided recently to hook it up and try it out. And it works fairly well. The interface is still crap. But it's slightly easier than the website itself, you know, to try to put things in there. I've noticed that, like, I love Netflix. Netflix is my streaming platform of choice. I like how Netflix remembers the things that you've watched. I like how it organizes things and kind of presents you with stuff. You know, the recent or currently viewing in Netflix, like, you know, continue watching kind of thing. They have something like that on the Amazon Stick, but it only has four slots. And if you have an app, it'll put an app in there. If you have a game, it'll put a game in there. And what I've noticed is it doesn't matter what the last thing was I watched, it always puts something else in there. Which is just fun. It's like it'll put like the last third thing that I watched instead of the last thing that I watched. So that makes it a little bit difficult when you're watching like a series because you have to go back and search for it in your list. But other than that, I mean, it streams really well. The audio is good. The video is good. But it's funny that I say this because just last night, Amazon's servers were down and you couldn't stream anything off of Amazon Prime.
I did see that. I saw that in my blog feed this morning that it was down.
But what's interesting is in my bedroom, I use a Blu-ray player to get to Netflix. But now I can use the Amazon HD stick to get to Netflix. So I've got one interface to get both Amazon Prime and Netflix. So that's kind of sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. The other one that's good is I have a Roku player, but the Roku has sticks as well that are inexpensive. And the good thing about Roku is they are pretty agnostic when it comes to what can be on there. You know, the problem is if you get like the Google Stick or the Google Chromecast, I don't know if you can even get Amazon on the Chromecast because Google and Amazon don't like each other very much. So they tend to kind of block each other with that kind of stuff sometimes. So that's the one problem depending on what you use.
And Amazon Prime now has a ton of HBO shows, not Game of Thrones. You have to pay for Game of Thrones extra. But they have a ton of older HBO shows. They also have where you can subscribe to Showtime and Stars.
Yeah.
If you want to, and they have free trials. So, for example, I was able to watch some more of Shameless, which actually was a BBC show. And then I guess Showtime adapted it for America. It's a great show about an Irish family in Chicago.
Cool. All right, Mike, what is your pick?
My pick is the Memoirs of Lady Trent by Marie Brennan.
You are not the first person to pick that book. I feel like we've had other authors pick that book in the past. Not recently, though. So tell us a little bit about it, though. Yeah.
I found it really interesting because it's sort of a mashup of fantasy, if you like, because there's dragons. But also it's done in the style of the sort of books that I found myself reading when I was young, like natural history autobiographies, like sort of books by David Attenborough and particularly Gerald Durrell, which I used to read a lot when I was young, of his accounts of going to Africa and South America to study animals and capture animals for live breeding programs to help with conservation. And I swear she must have read those sorts of things, because it's done in very much in the same way of a pseudo academic account that's been written for the public. But it deals with the same sorts of things of finding, going to a place to study animals and finding that what you find is really not what you expect, and finding yourself taken aback by local customs. I just thought it was a really interesting mix of two different genres that I hadn't seen done anywhere before. And certainly the stuff about the dragons is amazing, really well done, really well put together. A few of the other things I found a little bit jarring, like there's some parts that seem to be lifted completely from our world, which possibly shouldn't be, because there's a reference to Komodo dragons at one point, and I'm sitting there going, hang on, Komodo was a small island in Indonesia. Why is this being mentioned? It's like saying that you saw a Californian sea lion. It's very a little bit jarring, but for the most part, I found it's very well written. The main character whose perspective it's told from is very engaging, and it was a very interesting mix of two genres that I'd never seen put together before.
And I think the art and the illustrations on those books is magnificent. I've seen lots of those books, mm-hmm. and I think that's and very much within the spirit of what you're talking about. It is almost like a life drawing, like from a biology textbook or something like that. It's not just whimsy fantasy stuff. It's like sort of dragons if you were doing a biological study of them almost.
Yeah, and I mean, and the sketches inside as well, which are sketches purported to have been done by the author, that's very much like, I remember from reading Gerald Durrell's books, when he'd have sketches that he'd done of things that he'd encountered. So it's all done in a very almost like a tribute to real life stuff, but done in a fantasy world.
Yeah, and illustrations to me, it's something that I've been thinking about a little bit lately, because I read lots of different books, print books, ebooks, audiobooks, just really anything I can get my hands on. And I generally prefer ebooks and audiobooks over print books, except when it comes to illustrations. If there's illustrations in the book, I really want, even though they do an okay job of putting them within the ebook, but especially with something like a map, you know, it's hard to, you know, when I'm reading like a big fantasy tome, and they're mentioning a city or a town or something, it's like, where is that on the map? And I want to go back to the beginning, and I kind of want to get my headspace where it's at. So to me, print books will always be superior in that way, in terms of accessing illustrations and maps and things. And it's something that makes me want to hold on to the book. We're very fortunate. We get a lot of books sent to us from the various publishers, and I live in a fairly small apartment, and I can't house all these books. So when I'm done reading them, I usually donate them to my library. I figured, well, let's have someone else read them. But the ones with the illustrations, I usually keep, because I'm like, that's cool though. I want to keep the one, and you know, maybe my son will be into this, and maybe he and I will read it, and we can kind of check out the illustrations. So something that I'd like to see publishers do a little more of with the print books is, you know, put more maps in there, put more illustrations in there. I mean, I know that drives the cost up a lot, I'm sure, but I think it really adds to the reading experience, in my opinion. So, cool. That's a great pick. It's one that it's been. There's quite a few books out in that series now. I think at least three or four at this point.
There's four out. I think the fifth is due soon.
Okay. Cool. Well, you know, Mike, why don't you tell us? You know, speaking of books, why don't we talk a little bit about the book that you have out now, Dark Run? I've read a couple of different reviews of it, and the one little blurb that I loved was, let's see if I could find it now. It referred to it as a scoundrel-centric tale. I think that was the Wired review of it, and it compared it to Firefly and The Expanse. But I just loved that scoundrel-centric. I think that really says it all. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the world that you're writing in now.
Okay, it's set about roughly 500 years in the future, maybe, and humanity has settled the galaxy by means of using Alcibiades technology to move faster than light, which is sets up a bubble around whatever it is that you're moving, which collapses space-time. So it condenses it in front and extends it behind, which allows you to move through space without breaking the laws of physics, but you can still go faster than light because you compress space-time instead. But the upshot of that is you have faster than light travel, but you don't have faster than light communication, because I think there are possibilities for faster than light communication, but I really like the idea of it where you don't have that. So it's almost like a new Wild West frontier where news can only travel as fast as someone can physically carry it, which gives a lot more scope for scoundrels, because if you work hard enough, you can outrun your own bad news. And so it's based around the crew of a small freighter ship called the Kaiko, who have a variety of mysteries and secrets between them, and they're all just trying to get on and make a new life and not really pay much attention to who they used to be. But something comes up from the captain's past life, and then everything goes to hell, basically.
Well, it wouldn't be fun if it didn't. Who are some of the authors that you've read? You know, you mentioned some early books that you read in comparison to Marie Brennan's novels, but what are some influences on your particular writing?
Ooh, that's a little bit difficult when it comes to the science fiction stuff, because I'm always a bit ashamed to say this. I haven't actually read a huge amount of science fiction. I haven't read any of the classics, Asimov and everything. I haven't. I guess I must admit, although people do bring it up, I must admit that sort of the Firefly TV series was a big inspiration. Also stuff like Blade Runner. And I don't know if either of you are familiar with Games Workshop at all.
The video game company, Games Workshop?
Tabletop wargaming company.
Oh, is that the Warhammer stuff?
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
They, about 20 years ago, they brought out a game when I was a teenager, called Necromunda, which was a sort of a small scale thing that's set in the depths of this, massive, tower block city, basically. And it was also a kind of mix of futuristic stuff, but also because it was in the depths where no one went, it had this sort of almost Wild West gang feeling to it. So I was kind of going for the feeling of it's the future, but the future isn't nice and shiny like Star Trek. The future is dirty and bits fall off and you still can't get everything to work properly and you have to get by as best you can.
So the future is Babylon 5.
If I'd watched Babylon 5, I might be able to give you an answer on that. But I guess I suppose the other, I really did enjoy Timothy Zahn's Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, that was great.
That was really good, really good. I guess it's hard to say which authors influenced me much in terms of his science fiction writing. In terms of authors that I like reading, George R. R. Martin and Jim Butcher.
I love Terry Jim Pratchett. Butcher. Love Jim Butcher.
Yeah.
Have either of you read Jim Butcher's recent book,
The Aeronauts Windlass?
Yeah, The Aeronauts Windlass.
Yeah.
I'm about halfway through that now, and I'm really enjoying that one. So you read that one, Mike?
Yeah, I've read that. I thought it was a really good change of pace, actually. Really nice differentiation to the previous stuff, because I love the Dresden Files. Mm-hmm. For all the fact that basically Harry Dresden is sometimes a bit sexist.
Oh, a lot of times.
Don't is any getting away from that. I still love the series as a whole. The Codex Alera was, if I could be forgiven for saying it, kind of a sort of basic fantasy series, I suppose. It wasn't.
I think it was.
He did everything.
I think he was trying, though.
Yeah. He did everything really well. I guess there's anything particularly new there, but it was really well put together because he's a really good writer. But the Aeronauts Windlass, that feels new, fresh, interesting, really well written.
He's trying to find a voice. It. He's trying to find that voice that's going to help him, you know, post Harry.
Yeah, I think so. Cause you know, he's so associated with that one series. And I think most authors would be jealous to be that successful with anything, but that's the flip side of it is if that's all you're, if that's what you're known for, it's hard to break out of that. And I think he might be able to do it with this current book because I like the Dresden stuff a lot too. I haven't read all of it. I've read the first couple of books, but this is, it's a totally different feel, but, I really like the characters. I really like the world building that he's done. There's some familiar things, but there's he's kind of combining them in different ways, and it feels very authentic. So, yeah, I'm digging that one right now, too.
So I have a question because, Mike, you brought up Timothy Zahn. Do you watch that Star Wars Rebels cartoon?
No. Sorry.
That's okay.
I've heard that Thrawn is coming back.
That's what I was going to bring up, yes.
Yeah.
And you guys both also know that Zahn is going to be writing a new Thrawn book.
I'm curious about you, John. Are you excited to see Grand Admiral Thrawn in Star Wars Rebels?
Oh, yeah, of course. I am. And I'm excited. I'm really excited to see Thrawn. I'm sorry, Zahn. It's funny. Their names sound alike. To see Timothy Zahn tackle writing a character that I assume he created. I'm assuming that's...
He did, yeah.
Cloth is his creation, and see how he approaches it now, even though he wrote a whole trilogy with Thrawn in it. Now, this is going to be pretty different because Rebels takes place before that period. I mean, I guess not that. It'll only be a couple of years before that. So I wonder how much of the original character is going to be in there and how much is going – obviously, there's going to be different – actions going on and different plot things, but how much of the actual character is going to be intact? I'm curious to see how that's handled. Because we talked to Timothy Zahn years ago, and essentially what he told us was that, you know, at the time that he wrote those, there was no interest really in, or they didn't think there was an interest in Star Wars books, and Lucas didn't really have any plans to make any new movies. So they were just kind of like, yeah, go do what you want. It's fine. So I think he probably had more freedom than any Star Wars novelist has had since then. Now I think they have to, you know, make sure that their stories fit into the overall canon now. Whereas I think he just kind of got to do what he wanted. I'm sure there was a lot of editorial oversight as well, but probably not as much as there is now, I'm assuming. But one of the things that we have to get to switch subjects, because it's the elephant in the room, if you're watching, if you're in on this video chat right now, is that if you hear Mike is a science fiction author and he's English and he's very well spoken.
And he's a huge 80s metal fan, apparently.
And he's a huge 80s metal fan, apparently. But Mike
that
has
a complete and utter lie spread by my editor.
But that leads us to what I do want to talk about is Mike has a fantastic mohawk. It is a good 6 inches off the top of his head. And Mike is a singer and a guitarist in a punk band. The name of the punk band is, I believe it's Interplanetary Trash Talk, which is maybe one of the best names of a band I've ever heard. And you know, you in doing a little research on you leading up to this, and this is one of the reasons why Joe Monti, your editor over at Saga, wanted to get you on the show because he knew I was a musician. I think he thought we'd have a lot to talk about in terms of the music as well. You know, you talk about the how punk and science fiction are, you know, they're related in that they both imagine change. You know, they're you know, sort of speculating in that way. So maybe you could talk about, you know, you could talk a little bit about what you do in terms of your musicianship, and you could talk about how you feel that punk and science fiction are related to each other.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I can't speak for the entire genre. Certainly the punk music that I listen to and I like and I try to write is about, it's about identifying what's wrong with the world and vocalizing that, and about what should be better, what we should do to change things, or warnings of what will happen if we don't change things. I think that's certainly at the heart of most of the bands that I listen to, and it's at the heart of what I try to write. And I think that science fiction does that a lot as well. I mean, you can have, obviously you can have science fiction that's simply a celebration of cool technology in the future. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think a lot of good science fiction also shows the possibilities of the future. You know, what with anything, it's a case of you look at something and you go, what if this or what if that? And then you think about that. And sometimes the answer to the what if isn't very good. Doesn't look very good for humanity in general. And I think that's where you can. And if you talk about it, if you speculate about it, you write about it, if you write songs about it, then hopefully you're looking to maybe make other people think and try and bring people around to your own point of view in a way. I mean, I sort of think from another series that's published by my UK publishers, Del Rey UK, was the Osiris Project by an author called E.J. Swift, which is, I think it's been termed cli-fi. climate, which it doesn't say, I don't think she likes the term. I don't think it sounds very good myself. It's climate science fiction. And it's basically a sort of, it's not just a cautionary tale of global warming, because that would be boring. There are characters, very strong characters with definite character arcs. And it's a gripping story over the trilogy, but the background to it is a world where global warming ran out of control and how humanity is sort of been pressed out completely of the tropical regions down towards the poles, or the various different things that people have to do to survive now in this world. And it is a work of fiction, and I'm sure that, you know, the world would never end up exactly like that, but you know, you look at it and you think, well, maybe there is a risk that it could happen. And so I think that's where science fiction can be really useful, because it can make people think about issues through fiction, rather than just sitting down and talking to someone and going, do you realize X, Y, Z? This is what I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and as we're talking,
can I just interject, John, that I love that he said X, Y, Z.
I was thinking that as well. Yeah, it's not something we always hear. You know, but one of the things is we're talking about this now, Mike, you know, I just think about in terms of genre literature, there's how many subgenres have punk in it? You know, you have your steampunk and you have your cyberpunk and you have your all of these different things. And, you know, so I wonder,
yes,
how
are they really punk or have they sold out?
Well, in the case of steampunk, that's probably been sold out at this point. I don't know so much with cyberpunk, but it's interesting, you know, because I hadn't thought about that. And also with punk, as Mike said, I do think lyrically, what generally goes on in a lot of the music that Mike is referring to is writing about issues, about subjects, about not, it's not, I've been part of lots of songwriting groups over the years, and I've read a lot about songwriting and writing lyrics. And, you know, one of the you know, so I think if what you want to get beyond as the songwriter is, what you can consider feeling songs, meaning like I love and I feel and that's fine. A lot of the greatest songs that have ever been written have been that, but you know, a lot of good songs are about more than that, or about, you know, situations, or about things that are going on. And I think when you get into punk, usually oftentimes the lyrics are about something. You know, it could be a simple concept. It could be a political concept. It could be lots of different things. And if social. You're interested, social, yeah. And if you're interested, you know, if you go to Mike's website, I believe it was through your website that I found the videos that you have with your group. And there are some great videos. I don't know if it's the most recent one. It's a great song. And if you like that particular genre, it's really excellent. Now, Mike.
Hold on, John. The one that he shared on Twitter was pretty cool. I like the way that they did like the smoke and the fog and whatever it was that they were shooting out of the can.
Yeah, tell us a little something about that video, because that's the one that I was talking about.
Oh, is that the one? Okay.
I think it's the same one, yeah.
Yeah, we only have the one video.
Okay, so it's got to be that one.
The song's called Tragic Roundabout, which is a play on the Magic Roundabout, which you guys might not know of, because it was like a kids' program. In the late 70s, maybe?
The only BBC kids show that I know is Blue Peter.
Hmm.
okay. Yeah, keep with the quality. Now, Magic Roundabout itself was really weird because it was a French show that they brought over to British television and then just dubbed this one guy doing all the voices on top of it. He had no idea what the stories of the original French episodes were. He just made it up. So there's no idea. And a lot of people reckon that the different characters on there are actually sort of personifications of the effect of different drugs. which is a nice little conspiracy theory. But anyway, it was called a Magic Roundabout, just a kids show. We've turned it into Tragic Roundabout. So we shot that 2 weeks ago in a car park and on some waste ground in Nottingham, where I live. We had some smoke. Well, I say we. A guy I know who was doing the filming got some smoke grenades. He was really happy to be able to buy smoke grenades for business purposes. And so there's me and Emma, who's the main singer in our band, and this guy's iPhone, and suspended on some fishing wire, which we twirled around our heads.
That's what I thought.
Give it to the, yeah. It was, you know, really high technology
stuff. But it looks amazing.
He's really good at it. He took it and he edited it and it looks really good.
Yeah, I thought it looked great. And it's a great song too. Somewhere in... now, are you the only guitar player in the band or is there another guitar
No,
player?
there's a lead guitarist as well who can actually play.
That's okay. You need both kinds.
All you need is three chords, man.
Well, you know, somewhere when you're talking about this, and one of the things that I read that you wrote, you know, you just said like, you know, and distorted guitars always sound great, and they do. The guitar sounds on that tune are really great, and I think I remember reading. I think it's David. He pronounced his name Fricky. He's one or Frick or Fricky. He's one of the. He writes for Rolling Stone, and I remember when Green Day's first couple albums were getting very big. You know, he just described it as like, well, yeah, it's not surprising that it's popular. It's good, loud, distorted guitars with a good melody on top. And, you know, a lot of times that always sounds good. It's, you know, you get some good, loud guitars and you get a good melody on top. It sounds good. And that's what Mike's band sounds like to me. So it's good times. So Mike, you know, as we're starting to wrap up, so we talked about your music, we talked about your book.
Are you going to take your band on the road and promote your book by having your band play concerts and sell your book?
No, is the short answer. The band is very much a sort of a hobby for all of us. We've all got other things that we do, so it's kind of a spare time thing. I think we've played one gig actually outside of Nottingham, so it's not a big thing at all.
But that's the, you know, especially if you're not 18 and trying to make a full-time living, I think that's the it's hard to kind of continue on with your music. So I think if you put
but see, John, I'm saying that he's got a hook, he's got a shtick, he's got a way to bring people in. So as an example, Mike, here in Denver we have a very famous independent bookstore called Tattered Cover. What would be an example of a London-based independent bookstore? Do you know any names?
Sorry?
Do you know the name of any like London-based independent bookstores?
No.
The only thing I can think of is the comic book store, Forbidden Planet. But let's just use them for example. So you call Forbidden Planet and you say, "Hey, I've got this book, and I'll bring my band, and we'll set up, and we'll do a whole concert in your bookstore." That's gold.
I very much doubt it. if anything, for me, I'm kind of looking at it the other way around, is that if people have read my book, they might then go and check my band out. So
right now, as Joe Monte listens to this, he's going, "Shut up, Patrick. Just shut up."
So the book is there to promote the band. That's fine, too. That always cross promotion. That's what we call it. That's what we call it. But lots of good stuff, you know. So the book, once again, it's Dark Run. It's out now in the States. Book two is also out in the UK right now. They're both on Audible. So if one wants to listen to
this, is Audible.
Yes, that's always a great way to listen. And once again, you could check out Mike's website, mikebrooks.co.uk, and on Twitter at mikebrooks668. Now, Mike, are you going to be making any appearances at any conventions or anything like that coming up?
I am. I'm going to be at Nine Worlds Convention between 12th and the 14th of August in London. I will be appearing on a panel about Ewoks, of all things.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, Chichawawa. And I will also be... I will be playing my acoustic guitar and singing a couple of stupid geeky songs at the Bifrost Cabaret on a Saturday evening.
I suggest one of the songs be George R. R. Martin Is Not Your Bitch.
Oh, that's one of my songs. Yeah.
Well, I do have a song regarding Game of Thrones, the name of which I will not repeat here because it probably contains too many swear words, but you can find it on YouTube. And after that, I will be DJing at the other disco at the end of the night, because basically I do a lot of things to a tolerably mediocre level.
Well, that's all we can all hope for, is to do a bunch of things in a mediocre fashion. And I think if we all do that, then we're going to get by just fine in life. But that's great. Any plans to make it over to the States to Worldcon or anything like that anytime soon?
Nothing in the immediate future. I mean, I don't actually have a passport at the moment.
Neither do I.
So no. Yeah. It's the sort of thing that maybe at some point, but I'm not hugely adventurous. And I mean, I'm quite happy going to stuff here.
Next year it's in Helsinki. So that's a little bit closer. Slightly.
Yeah. Yeah, Worldcon's going to be there. Yeah, well, you know, we have a bunch of listeners in the UK, so go and it's Nine Worlds, it's called, and it's in August, so go and check Mike out there if you are over there. Okay, so once again, thank you for joining us, everybody. If you dig what we do, again, consider becoming one of our patrons over at patreon.com/functionalnerds, and thanks again to all the people that already support us.
And go buy the book.
And go buy Mike's book. Go buy Dark Run. It's out now through Saga Press and through Del Rey in the UK. And Patrick, anything else you want to tell people before we have to wrap it up?
$5.
All right, everybody. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mo. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?